This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin the show this week with The Casebook of Gregory Hood and the Adventure of the Beeswax Candle, this episode from June 24th, 1946. Then it's Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, and Two Dead Men, an episode that originally aired June 23rd, 1955. First, here's Gregory Hood.
Rewind brings you The Casebook of Gregory Hood. Tonight, the Petrie family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to the adventure of The Beeswax Candle, another exciting story from The Casebook of Gregory Hood. I hope you're sitting back in a comfortable chair after a good dinner. Did you try my suggestion to start that dinner with a glass of Petrie California Sherry? Petrie Sherry is the best beginning a good meal ever has. When you pour yourself a glass of that Petrie Sherry, just look at the color. A beautiful, deep amber. Then hold that glass of Petrie Sherry up to the light. Notice how clear Petrie Sherry is. Just as clear as crystal. That, you know, is one sure sign of a good sherry. But only when you put that glass to your lips do you really know how good Petrie Sherry is. It has a flavor that comes right from the heart of luscious, sun-ripened grapes. Oh, and say, if you like your sherry dry, you know, not sweet, Petrie makes a fine dry sherry. It's called Petrie Pale Dry. If you don't know which you prefer, the regular or the dry, why not try both? Don't buy one, buy two. But just be sure you always buy Petrie. Monday night in San Francisco, and we have a weekly date with Gregory Hood and his friend Sanderson Tate. Tonight's rendezvous is at one of this city's favorite and most colorful meeting places, the top of the Mark Hopkins Hotel. Let's join them there, shall we?
Harry Bartell, how are you?
Evening, Mr. Taylor. Hello, Gregory.
Hello, Harry. Come sit down. We were just discussing a story. It's really Sandy's story, so I'll let him set the stage for us. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, Harry, though it's an adventure that happened last January, it's as vivid in my memory as if it had taken place yesterday. It all began one evening when Mary and I were driving home from a party in the Berkeley Hills.
Mary, for your edification, Harry, being what Earl Wilson would refer to as Sandy's B.W.
B.W.?
Beautiful wife.
I get it. Go on, Sandy.
We were driving the Packard convertible, but even with fog lights, we could barely see the white line in the middle of the road. Everything was a grayish blank. And though it was only a couple of miles from the party to our home, we managed, among the twistings of all those unaccountable streets in the hills, to get completely and utterly lost. I didn't dare drive beyond the pace of a somewhat depressed and anemic snail, and as we crawled along, I prayed that the white line would lead us somewhere.
Sandy, this fog's rather exciting, isn't it?
It doesn't make driving exciting, Mary. I can hardly see the white line. I am afraid we're lost, darling.
Like a dream world. The kind of night when anything could happen. A night for adventure.
You sound like Gregory. All I want is home and bed.
Oh, that's nice, too. But tonight I think it's rather gay and romantic to be lost with you in the hills.
After 7 years of marriage, darling, that's very flattering.
Listen to that man playing the clarinet. Isn't it good?
Yeah, excellent.
I wonder who lives around here that plays like that. Sounds like a professional.
Darn it, even the streetlights are off. Power failure, I guess.
My, but it's quiet. The sort of night that...
The devil's that?
Somebody's in trouble. Stop the car, Sandy.
But, darling, it's the middle of the night. We can't see a hand in front of us.
Stop the car, Sandy. That sounded like a woman screaming. Come on, Sandy. It came from this direction.
Oh, wait for me, Mary. Wait for me, darling. Where are you? Mary! 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 I've lost my wife in this fog. I thought she might have come here.
She ain't come here. I'm not surprised you lost her. Why don't you keep sleeping hours and let Christian go sleep?
Yep.
I've lost my wife in this fog. She didn't come here, did she?
No, mister. How'd you lose her? I'd like to learn the trick.
Look, I have no time to joke. Do you have a phone?
Nope. Still hoping for one, though.
Well, how about the house next door?
Mrs. McIntosh lives there. She's got a phone.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you poor man. Of course you can use my telephone. It's over there.
Oh, thank you so much, Mrs. McIntosh.
This is no night for a young girl to be running around by herself. You had a quarrel, of course.
No, we didn't, Mrs. McIntosh.
Oh, of course you did. I know how these things happen. When I was a young thing, I used to be mighty headstrong myself. Oh,
but I assure you... police headquarters, please. Mrs. McIntosh, we heard a scream as we were crawling along. I stopped the car.
Police headquarters, Lieutenant King speaking.
Oh, this is Sanderson Taylor. I'm up in the Berkeley Hills, and my wife just jumped out of my car and disappeared in this fog.
What happened, Mr. Taylor? Did you have a spat?
No, we didn't, Lieutenant. As we were driving along, we heard a scream. I stopped the car, my wife jumped out, and just disappeared.
Okay, I'll be over in a patrol car. Oh, where are you?
Just a moment. What's the address here, please?
114 Ogden Drive.
114 Ogden Drive.
I'll make it as fast as I can in this fog.
I'll be waiting for you.
And now I'll make you a nice, strong cup of tea. And then you can tell me what you quarreled about.
Mr. Taylor, we've been in every house on this street, and there's no trace of your wife.
But Lieutenant King, she can't just have disappeared.
Well, looks as if she has. You're sure you didn't have a row with her and she hopped out on you?
How many times do I have to tell you that we didn't have a row?
Okay, okay. Look, Mr. Taylor, it's nearly 4 in the morning. I suggest you drive to your home. The fog's lifting a little now.
Oh, but Lieutenant...
If your wife does get near a phone, she'll be bound to call you or
Yes, but
us.
If we...
Now, just take it easy, Mr. Taylor. I'll bet you'll turn up before morning.
Good morning, Gregory Hood, importers.
This is Sanderson Taylor.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Is Mr. Hood there?
He just left.
Oh, Lord, I've been calling him all night. Do you know where he went?
Yes, Mr. Taylor. He's down at the dock supervising the unloading of a cargo. Well,
do you know the name of the boat or the pier number?
I don't know the name of the boat, but I think he said pier number 16.
Pier 16, okay. If he should call you, tell him I'm driving over there right away.
That's what happened, Gregory. I couldn't find any trace of her.
Gosh, Sandy, I wish I'd been home. I flew my plane down to Del Monte last night. Came back early this morning.
Oh, I must have called you 40 times during the night. I've been absolutely frantic.
I have a hunch it's all right, Sandy, but let's step ashore and get her a phone. I've got an idea. Oh, Lundborg.
Yes, Mr. Hood?
You take over the unloading.
Okay, Mr. Hood.
Be very careful with that Peruvian consignment. I've got a special client lined up for those Inca headdresses.
Right, you are, Mr. Hood.
All right. Now, come on, Sandy. Now, let me get this quite straight. You checked at all the houses near where Mary got out of the car?
Yes, as far as we know. As I told the police, though, it was hard to spot the exact area. We were completely lost in that darn fog.
Then your only real clue as to your location was that guy who was playing the clarinet just before you heard the scream.
Yes.
You say he was a good player?
Oh, top notch. I remember that Mary said he sounded like a professional.
Then that's our only lead, huh? Oh, here's a phone booth. Do you have a nickel, Sandy?
Sure. Who are you calling?
Harry James is at the St. Francis. He may be able to help us.
Oh, you mean he might know who the clarinetist is?
Sure. If he's really good, Harry will know him. Mr. Harry James, please.
Oh, it's a slim chance, Gregory.
True, true, but it's worth trying. Oh, Harry? This is Greg Hood. I know I must sound like the crack of dawn. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm in a jam. Perhaps you can help me. Well, my best friend's wife disappeared in a fog in the Berkeley Hills last night. The last time she was seen, somebody was playing a mighty sweet clarinet quite nearby. I thought you might know if there are any really good clarinet players living in Berkeley. You do? Yes, I will. Name of Bill Cooper, huh? You have his address, Harry.
In luck, Sandy. Oh, he knows a clarinet player in Berkeley.
Yes, he's looking up his address. Oh, yes, Harry? His address is 109 Marden Way. Much obliged to you, Harry. Yes, I'll call you later. We might have dinner together. So long, and thanks a lot. You have your car here, Sandy?
Sure.
Good, then let's head out across the bridge and pay a visit to Bill Cooper, the sweet clarinet player.
Mm-hmm.
house, all right. Does it strike a responsive chord, Sandy?
Well, it's hard to say in the daytime, but this street leads off Ogden Drive, and that's where I ended up last night in the fog. Mm.
I hope that Bill Cooper can help us.
So do I.
Yeah?
I heard your sweet clarinet, and I just couldn't resist dropping by.
Huh. You a musician?
I play around with the piano a little, in an amateur way.
Well, come in.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Cooper.
My name's Gregory Hood, and this is my friend Sanderson Taylor.
All right, Taylor.
Oh, I see you have a piano in here. Maybe we could try a little jam session sometime.
Yeah, maybe.
You a professional, Mr. Cooper?
Oh, no. It's just my hobby. I'm a teacher of judo.
That's an interesting combination.
Yeah, I bet it is. Judo's great stuff, you know. Gives you a feeling of power.
Oh. Look, Bill, I hope you can help me. Last night, around 12:30, my wife and I were driving near here. We heard you playing the clarinet.
Yeah, that's right. I was playing at that time.
And suddenly, we heard a weird scream. My wife jumped out of the car to investigate, and I haven't seen her since. I'm absolutely frantic.
Yeah, that's tough. What can I do to help you?
Well, did you hear that scream, Bill? You'd stopped playing a few seconds before.
About 12:30, you say?
Yeah.
Say, I do remember hearing a kind of squawk. I thought it must be the radio over at the professor's. It certainly came from that direction.
The professor?
Yeah, Professor Meyer. He lives across the street at 112.
Then let's pay him a visit, Sandy. I'm much obliged to you, Bill.
Well, that's okay, Mr. Hood. And when you straighten out on your mix-up there, why, come back and hit that keyboard. We might knock out a couple of hot licks together.
Mr. Gregory Hood, I am glad that at last you have come to investigate the house next door.
And why should I investigate it, Professor Meyer?
It's a house of mystery. Strange things happen there. Things I do not understand. Lights and noises. And last night, when I am in bed, I think I hear a scream.
You don't mean the house across the street, do you, Professor, where Bill Cooper, the clarinet player, lives?
No. I mean the house next to me. It's supposed to be empty.
An empty house in this day and age? That's a phenomenon.
I understand in some ways it's tied up in a state settlement, Mr. Hood. It cannot be sold until the ownership is decided.
Professor Meyer, why do you say the house is supposed to be empty?
No one lives there, Mr. Hood, but many times I've seen lights and movement there. I do not like it. And one night I think I hear... No, it is impossible.
We'll check with you later, Professor. Come on, Sandy. Right now we'll take a look at an empty house that screams.
House looks deserted, Gregory.
Yes, it does, Sandy.
Front door's locked, huh?
Yes, but the lock's old-fashioned. I think the skeleton key will do the trick.
I suppose I'm condoning a burglary, Gregory.
I don't think they'll send us up the river on this one. Open sesame. Come on, Sandy.
Gregory, I'm scared. Supposing
Take it easy, Sandy. Well, the house is unfurnished, and yet... It's...
Gregory!
What is it?
Footprints in the dust. A woman's footprint.
Leading into the front room. Come on.
Look, lying by the fireplace. It's Mary. Mary, darling.
It's all right, Sandy. She's breathing. She must have been drugged.
I'll run back to Professor Myers and call the police and get them to send an ambulance.
Do that, Sandy, though before you go, I suggest you take a look by the window there.
God. A bearded man lying on the floor. He's unconscious, too.
Uh-uh. If you look closer, you'll see that he's wearing a knife in the breast pocket. A knife that's in up to the hilt. Sandy, I'm afraid we are now mixed up in murder.
You'll hear the rest of tonight's story from the casebook of Gregory Hood and Good Dinner. I'll tell you how to make a good dinner really great. Just serve that good dinner with a good Petri dinner wine. If you're having hamburger steak, chopped, stew, in fact, any meat or meat dish, by all means serve it with Petri California Burgundy. Petri Burgundy is a hearty red wine with a marvelous flavor. Now, if you're having fish or chicken, try serving it with Petri California Sauterne. Petri Sauterne is a delicately flavored, subtle white wine. It's just perfect. And whether you serve Petri Burgundy or Petri Sauterne, or both, remember you can serve them proudly, because Petri is the proudest name in the long history of fine wine. Well, Gregory, again you left me cliffhanger. What happened next?
That's an easy one, Harry. Sandy sent for the police and an ambulance while I stayed in that deserted house. As soon as the ambulance arrived, we rushed off to the hospital with poor Mary and paced the corridor anxiously while the doctor was examining.
Why the devil doesn't he let me see her, Gregory?
Easy, Sandy. By the way, did the face of that bearded corpse strike a responsive chord in you?
No, I've never seen the fellow before.
I think I know him. The beard threw me at first. It must be recent. But I'm certain he's a refugee named George Renault. No.
Mr. Taylor? Oh,
doctor, is she going to be all right?
Yes, Mr. Taylor, she's going to be all right.
Oh, can I see her?
For a moment? Yes. But no longer. She's exhausted.
Mary, darling.
Oh, hello, Sandy, dear. Hello, Greg.
How do you feel, Mary?
Awful. Rather as if I'd been trying to rumble with a hurricane.
Oh, you poor darling.
Oh, don't worry, Sandy, dear. I'm really quite all right. The doctor says I'm suffering from shock, that's all.
What happened, Mary? Last night, I mean.
I don't really know, Greg. I ran down the street, turned the corner, and saw a light in the house. The only one that did have a light. The door was open. I walked in, and suddenly something hit me on the back of the head. And that's all I knew until just now.
Oh, Mary.
Except that squadrons and squadrons of twin-motor butterflies have been buzzing through my brain. Squadrons of them.
She's asleep, Gregory. Thank the Lord she's safe.
Yes, we'll come back later.
Mr. Taylor.
Oh, hello, Lieutenant King. This is Gregory Hood.
Oh, how do you do,
Lieutenant?
The doctor tells me your wife will have to stay in the hospital a couple of days.
I guess so. I wish I could take her home right now.
Well, I'm not at all sure you'll be able to do that when she's well, Mr. Taylor.
Hmm? Oh, what are you driving at, Lieutenant?
I may have to book her on suspicion of murder, Mr. Hood.
Oh, Lieutenant, are you crazy?
No, but your wife may be. We found her fingerprints on the dagger that was sticking in the dead man's chest.
But the blow on her head, Lieutenant. She was knocked cold by a blow on the back of the head.
That's her story, Mr. Hood. But I just talked to the doctor. He tells me there's absolutely no evidence of her having had a blow on the head at all.
You are back again, my friend, Mr. Cummings.
Thank you, Professor Meyer.
What did you find out at the House of Mystery, Mayor?
Quite a number of things, Professor, including my wife and the corpse.
Your wife and the corpse? I knew it. It is a house of evil.
I also found this book, Professor Meyer. It was lying under Mrs. Taylor's unconscious body. I thought it would interest you.
This is a 16th century book. The House of the Mirror of Malevolence. This confirms my suspicion as to that house next door. This is a book. A grimoire.
What's a grimoire, Professor Meyer?
I think Mr. Hood knows, don't you?
I think so. It's a handbook of black magic. A collection of all the most evil and supposedly potent spells, isn't it?
Correct, my friend. And this book, this Mirror of Malevolence, is one of the most celebrated and horrible of all grimoires. As a scholar, Mr. Hood, I would beg you to give this book to the university library. As a man, I'd say, burn it.
I can do neither at the moment, Professor. I must study it. Within these worm-eaten covers lies the answer to murder.
It's driving me crazy sitting around the house without Mary being.
I know. Did you call the hospital, Sandy?
Yes, she's fine, but Lieutenant King's still in residence there.
We've got to do something, Gregory.
I'm doing my best. While you were driving the children over to your aunt's, I devoured the Mirror of Malevolence from cover to cover.
And?
I'm confused, Sandy. This case isn't pleasant. In fact, it's very messy. We're mixed up in black magic. Black magic spells a nasty, vicious, evil mind at work. And it means even worse than that.
Gregory, for Pete's sake, stop strumming on the piano.
Okay. I'm sorry, Tom.
Sorry, I didn't mean to yell, Gregory.
I know, Sandy.
What did you mean just now when you said it was vicious and evil and worse than that?
Well, I was thinking what the police might imagine if they realized this was a black magic case. If that scream you heard last night was not a death scream, but some part of the filthy ritual. Supposing Mary wandered in and something happened. Well, Sandy, wouldn't it be possible that she killed him herself?
Gregory, you can't believe that.
I couldn't, but Lieutenant King could, and I wouldn't blame him.
What we have to get is a confession.
From whom?
Oh, I know from whom, all right. It's a question of how. If only this darn book would... Sandy, I deserve to be kicked from here to Sacramento.
What are you burbling about?
I've got the answer. It's right here in the book. Let me see. Here it is. Listen. I'm reading from page 96 of The Mirror of Malevole. How you may make a murderer confess his crime. In a candle of pure beeswax, insert the cuttings of the nails of the dead man. Burn this in the presence of the murderer, and the spirit of the dead man will descend upon him and torment him until he do confess his murder.
Gregory, I'm willing to ride along with you most times, but if you put any faith in that kind of stuff...
Never mind that, Sandy. I think this is going to work. Get your nail clippers. Then we'll go out and find a nice white beeswax candle. After that, I'm planning on playing a hot duet with Bill Cooper, amateur clarinet player. I think we may smoke out a murderer.
Well, I'm flattered you came back, Mr. Hood. What do you want to play?
Well, let's ad lib, Bill. You might start from here. It's a little number I whipped up a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
You all set, Sandy?
Yes, Gregory, I'm all set.
Okay, Bill, let's see where you can go on from here.
Right.
Now, Gregory?
Yes, Sandy, now.
Hey, what's burning?
A beeswax candle with George Renault's nail paring stuck down it.
Put it out!
What's the matter, Bill?
Put that candle out!
Grab him, Sandy.
I got him. Put it out! Let go of me!
Oh, no, Bill. We'll hold you so you can watch the candle burn. It's pretty, isn't it? You feel him now, don't you? The spirit of the murdered man has descended to torment you.
Let me go,
Bill. He'll keep on tormenting you, Bill, as long as that candle burns.
Cut it out!
Until you confess.
Let me alone, put out that candle!
You killed George Renault, didn't you?
No, I didn't put out that candle!
It's going to burn, Bill. It's going to burn right down.
Come
on, Bill. Why not admit it? You and Renault played at black magic, didn't you?
No!
Oh, yes, you did. You admitted before that you had a taste for power. You thought you could get it that way.
I tell you,
finally, you killed him because nothing could give you more power than human sacrifice.
I did. Kill him, boy. That candle, please.
You did, Bill. And when Mrs. Taylor walked in on the killing, you struck her with one of those paralyzing blows that are peculiar to judo. It left no mark, and you planned to frame her for the killing.
Please,
you put a fingerprint on the dagger.
Oh, that candle.
That's what you will. You're in for it, Bill. You can't escape. George Renault's murdered spirit has returned. It'll never leave you, never. Unless you confess. We'll burn candles until you've forgotten what daylight looks like.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Let me run. I do blow out that candle. It's crazy. It's crazy. Blow it out, will you? Let us tell you everything.
Mary, darling, how
are
you feeling?
Still a little woozy, Sandy, dear, but fine. And Gregory?
Yes, then?
You are wonderful. Lieutenant King tells me that you saved me from a possible murder charge.
I think you understand how it was.
Why should she, Lieutenant? Personally, I think you have a horrid mind.
I'm just a guy who works on facts, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Hood got a nice, clear confession out of Cooper. He keeps saying the dead man tormented him. How'd you do it, Mr. Hood?
By using a 400-year-old book.
But, Gregory, you didn't really believe in that stuff.
Of course not. It's pagan and horrible, but Bill Cooper believed in it. The only way magic ever appears to work is when the victim knows about it and believes it.
But what made you think it was Cooper in the first place, Mr. Hood?
For one thing, the fact that he'd been an instructor in judo. That would account for his being able to stun Mary without leaving any physical trace. But the real clincher was the scream last night.
I don't get you, Gregory.
Cooper said he thought it was the professor's radio. But there was a power failure in this area at the time. You told me, Sandy, that all the lights were off.
That's right, they were.
Sure. If Cooper had been in his own house, he'd have been sitting in the dark. And he'd have known darn well that his neighbor's radio wasn't working. He lied flatly, and why should an innocent man do so? Because he was in the deserted house, lit only by candles, and improvising on the clarinet. He didn't know about the power failure. But that didn't make a court case, and I have to scare him into a confession.
Gregory, dear, you're a very remarkable man.
Thank you, Mary. You're a very remarkable girl.
I thank you for saving me from a gas chamber.
Oh, think nothing of it, Mary.
But I do. And I make you a promise.
What is it, Mary?
Whenever we have you to dinner from now on, I'll set the table with beeswax candles.
Charming.
Candles without fingernails. And for the main course, Gregory, we'll have twin-motored butterflies.
Greg, that was some story. I didn't know you knew so much about black magic.
I'll let you in on a little secret, Harry. I don't know a thing about it. The only kind of magic I know is what my old father taught me. He did the most wonderful act of throwing a woman in half. But it never worked with me.
You mean you couldn't master the trick, Greg?
No, it requires lots of practice.
Oh, and you couldn't find the time?
No, I couldn't find the woman.
Oh, no.
But, Harry, you must know a few pretty good tricks yourself.
No, not one, Greg.
Now, come on, Harry. How is it every time I come to your house, you dish up such marvelous meals and you're no cook?
Ah, Greg, that's because of the Petri wine. Didn't your old father ever tell you what a good dinner wine does for any meal?
It all comes back to me now.
And you know Petri wine is good wine. Why, it's got to be. Look at the long years of skill and experience that goes into its making. The Petri family has been making wine for generations. Winemaking is their heritage. A heritage handed down from father to son, from father to son. So you can see why the Petri business has grown and grown, so that today the Petri family are America's largest independent winemakers. Yes, the making of Petri wine is a family affair, and the Petri family has every intention of keeping it just that. So you know the name Petri on a bottle of wine is more than a trademark. It's the personal assurance of the Petri family that Petri wine is and always will be good wine. Well, Gregory, which particular page of the casebook are you turning to for next week's story?
Next week, Harry, I'm going to tell about an odd story that took place in Hollywood some months ago. It concerns a noted columnist, an extremely garrulous press agent, pardon me, and a very dead actress. I call the adventure Murder in Celluloid. See you next Monday, Harry.
You bet, Greg.
And in the meantime, if you hear of any place for rent or sale, will you let me know?
Don't tell me you're looking for a place to live.
No, Harry, it's for a friend of mine, a veteran who just got back. Believe me, this housing shortage is really hitting the returning servicemen hard. And if anybody deserves the break, they do. I think it's up to us to do what we can to see that they get first chance at any vacancy. Remember, if you have a vacancy, lend it to a veteran. Good night.
The Casebook of Gregory Hood is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher. Original music composed and played by Dean Fossler. Gail Gordon plays the part of Gregory Hood, and Sanderson Taylor is played by Art Gilmore. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. The Casebook of Gregory Hood comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. That charge to cure that tired, listless feeling, apply to a switch artist named Max. Max, of course, being the state electrocutioner. The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Any formula for mixing dynamite is good enough, provided the end result is an explosion. What is the Craig formula for dynamite? Okay, two ingredients are required, namely, amateur tennis and the international social set. The result? Strictly dynamite. I had both ingredients wished on me one balmy summer's afternoon at the tennis matches. I was in a grandstand box under the candy-striped awning. Ah, life as she has lived. A tall iced drink in my hand and my hostess at my elbow. Said doll, an aging blonde, was Hilda Hobson, former screen star, very rich, very eccentric, and queen of the International Cafe Society.
Craig Wonderful!
The tennis match in progress was the tournament championship finals, Curt Kenny versus Bobby Blaine. Both lads as big in tennis as Rocky Marciano in boxing. The player, Curt Kenny, was, oddly enough, husband to Hilda Hobson. I said oddly enough because the boy was 25, about half the age of his bride and my client. What was I doing in a twosome with Hilda Hobson? Watching her jewels. $250,000 worth of ice, as the lady herself explained it.
Oh, I wear my jewels to the tennis finals every year. It's traditional.
It's wicked. Hold still while I take inventory. And by the by, who's winning out there?
Bobby Blaine's leading in the fifth set.
Kenny and Blaine won two sets apiece so far. This one's the rubber match.
Yes, Kurt's behind 4-love.
4-love meaning 4-0, fifth set. Looks like your hubby's chances for the championship is down the drain.
It does look hopeless for Kurt. Oh, well. Oh, played! Wonderful! Oh, wonderful!
What was played?
You're not watching the match.
I can't and also watch your jewels.
Oh, an ace. Bobby Blaine just scored a beautiful service ace.
You sound like you're rooting Blaine in instead of Curt Kenny.
Blaine is such a beautiful player.
Well, so is your husband.
Curt? Curt is past his peak.
Oh? What goes now?
They call time. Mr. Craig, will you please follow the game and stop asking me questions? I'm beginning to feel, well, heckled.
Time called meant a minute's pause. Time for the players to sponge their brows, swallow salt and energy tablets, guzzle soda pop kept in a handy ice bucket. I watched Kenny and Blaine return to the court. The only thing, there was no action. It was Bobby Blaine's service, but he wasn't serving. He was stalling, looking a bit wobbly in the knees.
Why doesn't Blaine serve?
I don't know. Ask me, he looks a little sick.
Sick? Good heavens, he just needs one more point for the game.
Blaine's down. He's flat on his face in the dirt.
Give me those binoculars. What? Blaine's just lying there.
Unconscious. I mean, if only unconscious.
If only unconscious.
The heart, m'lady. Five grueling sets in a 90-degree heat, or are tennis players immune to heart attacks? In the emergency room, a quick complex of first aid and restoratives did nothing for the horizontal tennis player. A full-fledged doctor hadn't arrived yet. The tournament public relations man was doing emergency medical honors. A fidgety chap named Benton, Harry Benton. Say, if I could get closer to the patient a minute...
Why, sure, go ahead. Please stop crowding around, folks. Please, this isn't an exhibit. Well, mister?
Cancel the doctor call and call the morgue wagon.
Blaine is...
very dead.
Blaine's heart, was it?
That was my guess right off. But I don't think so any longer.
You don't think so?
The rigidity of the face and the neck muscles.
Pretty horribly contorted.
Blaine died in agony.
What are you sniffing at?
A powdery residue around his lips.
Well, that's the salt tablet.
Salt is odorless.
You find a smell?
Enough to bowl me over. But not quite like it bowled Brother Blaine over. Blaine was poisoned, a quick poison to which he reacted almost immediately. $10, says the medical examiner, will spell out the text of my diagnosis. Murder. The deputy medical examiner pronounced it death by poison. The murder made big evening headlines and juicy gossip among the tennis set. I had an evening drink with the public relations man, Harry Benton, at Benton's request. We met in a place called the J. Creighton Memorial Club.
I want to engage your professional services, Mr. Craig.
To do what?
Clear up the mystery.
Who murdered Bobby Blaine and why?
Yes.
Well, have some faith in the police.
We want a private operative working in close liaison with us.
We and us? Explain the plural.
Well, sir, I represent the J. Creighton Memorial Tennis Association. You know the name, Jay Creighton?
Hazily, a champ tennis player once upon a time.
A tennis giant, Mr. Craig. Creighton died in the 20s. He left a $5 million trust fund to endow tennis, encourage and develop young players.
Et cetera, et cetera. It's embarrassing. It's bad public relations. It's a black eye for the Jay Creighton Foundation.
Yes. Will you take the job?
I took it 10 minutes ago. I'd love some of the J. Crete Memorial loot for myself. What have I got against money? Now, orient me. Who in Tennis Society had murderous impulses toward the late Bobby Blaine?
Tennis Society is a world unto itself. Pretty peculiar. You've no idea, Mr. Craig.
You're a guy who just loves talking around the mulberry bush, making with the long-winded preamble. Come on, Benton. Take me inside tennis. I kicked off my investigation with Kirk Kenny. Kenny had a case of nerves.
Look, I'm in no mood for any interrogation.
Nobody ever is.
Some other time, huh?
Murder can't wait.
Oh, yeah, and that murder theory. Ask me, it's a malarkey. You cops, I was trying to make a dull job look sensational.
Diagnosis, murder. Medical examiner verified it. Poison.
Nobody pried Blaine's jaws open and fed him the poison.
No, but somebody left a pill handy to Blaine's reach between games. A pill Blaine would confuse with the standard energy or salt tablets.
Oh. Is that the autopsy report?
I'm betting it will be.
Well, now, why would anyone poison Blaine?
Why would anybody poison Blaine on a tennis court? And at the exact time it happened?
Is that an oblique dig at me?
You're the only beneficiary to Blaine's death I know, yet...
How am I a beneficiary?
The incident saved you from defeat. I think you wanted to win today with every fiber in you. And for more reasons than just the title.
Now, what other reasons would I...
To stay on top. Be tops with Hilda Hobson. Keep the relationship superheated. If Hilda Hobson had any inhibitions, they weren't showing.
You deserted me there in the stadium.
I'm sorry. A corpse generally has priority.
I suppose you've come to ask me embarrassing questions.
You could just let me read your diary.
Oh, not on your life. Ask your first question.
At the game today, I guessed you to be sour on Kenny and sweet on Bobby Blaine.
Was it so obvious?
And how did Blaine feel? That is, before he lost all feeling.
Very eager for my company.
Very eager to win the title of Mr. Hilda Hobson from Kenny?
I'd half promised Blaine I'd divorce Kurt Kenny, but what dull questions, Mr. Craig.
Sorry. What power do you wield over these young athletes?
I'm worth $5 million, Mr. Craig. My husbands enjoy liberal allowances.
Oh, walking around money. Who and play tennis? Answer me this. What fatal appeal do these young men have for you? Can I get a frank answer?
No, you can't.
Well, then give me a funny answer.
As a girl, I idealized the classic Greek gods. At 50, I still do.
Now, who murdered Bobby Blaine?
I suppose Kurt Kenny, poor deluded boy. As if the removal of Blaine could possibly help him with me.
Would it?
No.
Some other Greek god on the horizon?
One always happens along.
Oh, sure. There are 6 major tournaments before the close of the year. Your young Greek gods, all born poor, on the wrong side of the tracks. All crazy to get invited to the best places, using a tennis racket to club their way into society. Oh, it's a nice, vicious circle. Leaving Hilda Hobson's, I didn't quit the grounds of the estate. Not yet. I headed for the garage. The Hobson chauffeur had an apartment over the garage. A chap named Pepe Zaretti. He'd figured in the purple gossip the public relations man Harry Benton had passed along to me. Like his boss lady, Pepe was but totally uninhibited.
Was I once the husband of Hilda? Yes. I had that unforgettable pleasure.
You were a South American tennis title holder once.
I was the best tennis player in the world once.
Until Hilda married you and put you on an allowance.
Yeah, I have no regrets. It was a charming interlude, our marriage. Guinea hen, champagne, skin diving in Bimini.
Whose idea was it for you to stay on as chauffeur after the divorce?
We arrived at the idea, how you say it? Yes, simultaneously. Hilda does not love Pepe anymore, but she does not hate me. So I stay. to serve her this way, as her good friend and chauffeur.
How's your tennis?
I am fat here in the middle, and here in my wrist, rheumatism.
Very sad. So who poisoned Bobby Blaine?
You want me to answer that?
I'd appreciate it.
Poor Court Kenny. How terrible if Pep is ready to send him to the electric chair, huh?
You're saying Kurt Kenny did it?
Yes, I say. I say what I see.
Now, what did you see and where?
Driving to the stadium this morning for the championship finals. I am driving Kurt Kenny. We are stopped to give Bobby Blaine a lift.
Cozy. The opposition riding to the battle together.
No, it's a courtesy. Blaine's car is broken down. He's stranded on the highway as we pass.
Go on.
Well, in the car, I hear with my ears Bobby Blaine saying that he forgot his energy pills, that they are left in the dashboard compartment of his car. Then I see what I say.
Don't scramble it. Say it.
Kenny gives Bobby Blaine a few energy pills of his. I see this in my rearview mirror.
You're really putting the finger on Kenny.
To think that I should be the one.
Now tell me, who succeeded you as Hilda's husband? I mean, direct succession.
Kurt Kenny. Hilda saw him win a tournament in Milan. And that night she locked me out of the house. Finny, we were through. You think I'm revengeful against Kurt Kenny?
Aren't you?
Yes, I am. I would tell any lie to hurt him.
Like now?
No, no, no. This time I'm telling the truth. The electric chair for Kurt Kenny. What a delicious possibility.
I found Blaine's buggy in the Trilex garage, where it had been towed for repairs. I had to force the lock of the dashboard compartment. There was at least some truth to Pepe Zaretti's testimony. I found a small cardboard box. The box contained square white tablets, energy pills, presumably. It now looked like the late Bobby Blaine could have borrowed a few pills from Kenny. A few pills with one of them doctored with a deadly poison. That is, unless somebody hadn't planted the ones I'd just found to incriminate Kenny. Somebody like Pepe Zaretti. A nice trick, very easy to work. My client, the public relations man, Harry Benton, perspired freely over my temporary report.
If you prove Kurt Kenny guilty of the murder, what a blow to tennis.
What a blow to the J. Creighton Memorial Association, you mean?
Yes. The association originally discovered and sponsored both Kenny and Blaine. Both were identified with the association as protégés. The fund maintained them, paid their college bills, developed them as players.
Until Hilda Hobson took over the burden.
Well, you can't blame the fund.
Maybe not. But boys born to working-class families lose their sense of balance in a susceptible atmosphere. Too many of the expensive set making a fuss over them. I mean, if the boy's a winner. And only for so long as he continues to be a winner. Ask me. Big tennis could use a little more soul. However...
That's neither here nor there. Mr. Craig, the problem now is how to restrain the press.
Restrain the press from what?
From sensationalizing Kurt Kenny's arrest. I've got to get them to play it down in the interests of tennis.
You're being a little previous, Benton. Kenny hasn't been arrested. Nor is it sure he will be. I'm not fully convinced of his guilt.
Yes, but I am.
Only as a result of my report?
Your report and something I discovered last night.
What?
Kurt Kenny had money bet in his finals match with Blaine. Quite a sum of money. $5,000.
Looked like a pickup jury had already found Kenny guilty. Hilda Hobson, Harry Benton, Pepe Zaretti. No vote there for Kenny's innocence. One vote for Kenny's innocence came along, however, out of left field, in the J. Creighton Memorial Club, exclusive for members only. A girl. A girl who looked as if she'd crashed, dressed in a plain business suit, no sequins in her hair, no expensive look. She caught me at the bar in the middle of a swallow.
Mr. Craig, I must talk to you.
Well, what about?
Kurt Kenny.
Your brother?
No. Kurt's just a good friend.
And you are?
Polly Blair.
Well, talk.
The infamous stories about Kurt, they're all lies. Kurt's fine and gentle. He couldn't hurt a fly.
Well, nice character reference, but how well do you know him?
As I know myself.
That's a pretty broad statement.
I know his true nature, his dreams, ambitions, his inner thoughts. You see, Kurt confides in me. Someone he can talk to, frankly and openly.
You sound like a sweetheart.
Kurt's a married man.
A husband sometimes strays.
Don't please add to the infamy circulating about Kurt. Isn't it difficult enough for him?
It is.
Help Kurt. Believe in him as I believe in him. The stories you hear that Kurt could poison. Lies. All horrible, godly lies.
Time, I figured, for a follow-up examination of Kurt Kenny. To get Kenny, I had to sit through a tennis match. I occupied my same seat in the grandstand box under the candy-striped awning. Same deal as before. A tall ice drink in my hand, compliments of Hilda Hobson. Hilda herself was loudly in evidence.
My, but Kurt is sharp today.
Yeah, going great. Service aces, passing shots, drop shots, right on his game. Like he didn't have a care in the world.
Kurt, without a care in the world.
You know better, huh?
Oh, I live with the man. He's been drinking like a fish. Up all night with insomnia. Why, he hasn't had a bite of food for days. He's playing on sheer nerve.
Oh, that's tough. Booze, insomnia, starvation. So when did he begin being homeless, Hilda?
Homeless?
You're giving him the boot, I remember you saying. Or was there a change of heart since?
There hasn't been. I want especially to be fancy-free for the eliminations this summer in Rome. Besides, I've got more reasons than ever to send Kurt packing.
Meaning Kenny's fatal match with Bobby Blaine of the other day?
You want to bandy words.
Suppose you spell it out.
Kurt poisoned Bobby Blaine.
You have proof?
Oh, you're the detective. I'm just an intuitive wife.
And your intuition convinces you, huh?
Beyond a doubt. It's all over, Kurt. Guilt. Every minute with me. Even his manner and look. Guilt.
I see. Well, the set's over.
Kurt won it 6-2. That evens the match.
Third set coming up. This is where it began, Hilda.
It began?
That other day, the fatal day. Time out before the third set, remember? Kenny and Blaine just where Kenny and Corbett are now. Under the referee's stand, sponging off, gulping salt tablets and energy pills. And 2 minutes later, Blaine fell dead.
Poor Bobby Blaine.
Yeah, weep for the dead. Tell me something, Hilda.
Tell you what?
Womanly intuition. You remarked on it before. How about manly intuition? Is there any such thing?
Oh, do you suffer from sunstroke?
No, from shock.
Shock?
The shock of maybe soon seeing Kurt Kenny swallow an energy pill, then move over to the baseline to open service and fall down dead. Will he, Hilda? What does your intuition tell you?
You are suffering from sunstroke.
You evaded answering, and now I'm really shocked. Excuse my rush, lady. I've got to get out on the field and save a life. I was on the field in time to prevent Kenny from swallowing a white pill, salt or energy. I had to wrestle him out of his hand.
Now, come on.
Give them up, Sonny.
Have you gone insane,
Craig? Maybe I have. A cop goes intuitive. He could be shaping up for a psychiatric ward.
But intuitive? Well, what's your idea about these pills?
I see you're getting kind of intuitive yourself. I want these pills sent to the police chemical lab for testing. If they're okay, call me impulsive. If they contain poison, call Hilda Hobson, Madam Bluebeard. Chemical lab's verdict on the pills was poison, deadly poison. I had another chat with Kurt Kenny later that evening. I found him shocked into honesty.
Sure, I bet on myself, every penny I could raise. I was so sure I could beat Bobby Blaine. You see, I needed money, my own money. I had a plan for myself.
A plan to cut loose from Madame Svengali, a
Hilda Hobson, that is.
Yeah, be on my own. Be a man for a change.
Divorced from Hilda and married to Polly Blair.
Yes.
Hilda then knew you were walking out.
Hilda knew. Suppose her pride was hurt.
Her homicidal instincts were aroused. The fatal tablet Blaine swallowed was meant for you. You'd innocently passed it on to Blaine that morning you gave him an automobile lift.
The morning Blaine had left his tablets in a stranded car. Huh. Poor Blaine.
You were supposed to duplicate Blaine's death fall today. Swallow a doctored tablet Hilda had sneaked into your pillbox.
Well, how could Hilda ever expect to get away with it? Plain murder.
You'd die and be pronounced a suicide from remorse. Remorse for murdering Blaine. Hilda had her out, she thought.
Craig, I owe you a...
You owe Polly Blair. If Polly hadn't tipped me to your romance with her, I'd never have gotten an insight into Hilda Hobson. You see, I thought Hilda was giving you the contemptuous toss. I never dreamed that Hilda was a woman scorned. I had a few parting words with Hilda Hobson in police headquarters, watching her get mugged and fingerprinted.
Kurt was leaving me. Leaving me, Hilda Hobson, for a cheap little gammon.
For a girl he could have equality with.
I suddenly saw myself as old and unwanted. Unwanted.
Very moving scene, Hilda. Normally I'm a softy for tragic emotion. But right now, for the life of me, I can't get an idiotic jingle out of my head.
Idiotic jingle? What?
I'll say it, but don't hate me. Tennis, anyone?
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Two Dead Men, was written by John Robert. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Andrew C. Love. Our cast included Virginia Gregg, Herb Ellis, George Neese, and Tony Barrett. Hear Bill Henry and the news on most NBC radio stations.
That's going to do it for the show this week. I hope you enjoyed these selections this time. If you want to hear more from either one of those series, just visit relicradio.com. There's ways to search the site. There's an easy one right on the front page. Just type in what you're after, and you will be directed to where it is. There's also links there to all the other podcasts, our forum, Shoutcast stream, all that stuff, and our donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Thank you very much to those who have. How we keep going. Thank you very much for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with episodes from Casey Crime Photographer and Nightbeat on another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.